and it's growing year on year. As companies become more global, there's a requirement for people to travel more.
Welcome to Social Fabric. In this program, we'll bring you conversations with people discussing their passion and the interaction with their community. We explore how different jobs, careers, or achievements can inspire us to make small changes to improve our lives within our own community. You can find more episodes on socialfabric.ie or wherever you get your podcast. The program is also broadcast weekly on Dublin's Near FM 90.3.
This week my guest is Carl Llewellyn. Carl is a serial entrepreneur and founder of Santafly, a company that hopes to change the way we travel. As a full disclosure, I am one of the early investors in Santafly. This is my conversation with him.
Can I call you up a while it's on a Friday night? We could reminisce on old days and we could talk a while.
Just get me somewhere in Rome. And that person points at getting us somewhere in Rome.
Right.
And then that person's working aggressively to improve the network, improve locations. So that allows me to focus on sales, which is what I want to do. But my, like right now, my day is literally split into three parts between championing the customer, sending out looking for more locations.
All right. Well, look, we get started, will we?
Yeah.
So, Carl Llewellyn.
Andrea.
Thanks a million for having me once again as a guest in the house. Lovely house.
Oh, welcome.
And then finally, we get to record this chat. We always have loads of chats, but this time we're going to put it on record and share it with the world.
Are you going to tell them where you are and the view?
No, you can tell us. Where are we?
We're sitting in our kitchen overlooking the Atlantic Ocean on a beautiful March day after our swim. Well, your swim, yeah. My run.
Fabulous. Well, we'll talk about the house in a minute, but I want to start just a little bit at the very beginning, like growing up in school and college and all of that. Just give us a bit of a synopsis of how would you describe your little journey into adulthood?
Into adulthood?
Well, from growing up in wherever you grew up.
I grew up in Drumcondra in North Dublin. I went to school in St. Patrick's, which was still is the teacher training school for primary in Ireland. So we had supposedly the best of everything. In practicality, we had the best of everything. There was a computer room, and you're talking about in the late 70s, where we were learning basic and languages, such as basic and Pluto at school. What a good day did me. And I went from there in the early 80s to Rockwell College and Boarding School in Tipperary.
What age were you when you went to Rockwell?
I was 1983. There was 90 students in our year. 100 students in a year, 90 of which were boarders. So 10 day dogs, as they were called at the time, the local kids. One room, 90 boys sleeping together. And you know, you think back and we have funny stories. Some of those guys are still my best friends, as you well know. It's just funny out, yeah.
But from Drumcondra, you know, pack your bags. Well, your parents packed your bags and say, off you go to Tipperary. Had you been to Tipperary before?
I'd gone to Camp Rockwell, which was a summer camp for a week.
Okay. And what was it like? I mean, as a kid,
my complete outlook on it was I was having sleepovers, friend sleepovers, every night of the week. You know, there was a swimming pool there. There were sports activities. It was everything. I was quite into sports. Might have been very good at them. I was quite into it. But just the fact that I wouldn't have to go to my parents and go, oh, can you bring me to, can we go to this? It was just everything was there on site. I was entirely, this is half full.
Wow. Obviously, you enjoyed it in the few years you were
there. Oh, I did, yeah. Like, there is a harsh reality to it as well. but I do look back with rose-tinted glasses on my time in Rockwell, yeah.
Brilliant. Did you go on to do college afterwards, or what did you do after Rockwell?
After Rockwell, I went to college to what is now DIT to study CCMA, which is Cost Management Accountancy. And I in the second year, I was putting myself through college. And I was running a little business at the time to do that, which was an agency for cast metal signs in Ireland. So the nameplates you would see on sides outside houses, but also directional signs and business signs. And it was doing quite well. And I would say quite well, I was earning maybe 150, 250 a week, which as a student with a car and 150 quid, I was the high roller. But midway through the second year, you know, the business was doing better. We were now opening up nationwide distribution, blah, blah. And I went to my dad. I said, what do we do here? And he went, God, the College of Life. It's the best college of all. It's all you need. So, yeah, my dad advised me. And I was an easy push to drop out of college.
Out of college, okay.
And pursue that, yeah.
Wow. Use your first song, then Alternative Ulster, Stiff Little Fingers.
Yeah. I know, because I was looking at the songs Jazz would pick, and I was thinking, as I said, chronologically of those songs. And that song, it's not the message of the song, it's the chords of the song. And I can remember being at the Scout Down in Malahide, which would have been, you know, our teenage disco, so to speak. And, you know, no matter where you were in the room, or, you know, who you were talking to, you might have been talking to a girl, you know, and whatever, going, yeah, oh yeah, no, your hair looks great, yeah, oh, that's nice. Once you heard the first chords of the song, it was like a hunting call, you know. You were just, and every guy was on the floor ready for, you know, the massive pogo that needed to go on for the next 3.5 minutes. You could, if you missed that, you know, your night was destroyed, you know. So it was just one of those, yeah. Yeah, herding calls from that period. Still to this day, it's one of those you hear the first beat, you know, that song.
One of the main reasons I wanted to talk to you was to do with your entrepreneurial prowess as such. And you just mentioned, so you were 18, 19 when you decided to get into this business. How did you get into it? Like, how did you get into it? What was it?
You know, my father, to a great extent, is my hero in a lot of ways, but he'd always worked for himself. And so I only saw myself as... an entrepreneur, a sales guy running their own business. And it made me a dreadful employee, you know, and the jobs that I did hold down in my 20s were always for a couple of years, because I just had that unfortunate arrogance of, right, you know, I'm doing this, but I can do that, and it won't be long before I'm doing what you're doing. You know, completely misplaced arrogance. But arrogance comes with entrepreneurship, and it's when you can get that balance right that it works. And sometimes it's maturity is the only thing that starts to put that in its place.
And what was your, do you remember your first deal? Like the first deal where you actually went, that was it. I'm going
to
do this.
I can remember, not first deal, but I remember wanting to go away for a weekend with some good friends of ours, Ross Thompson and Johnny Barrett, God rest them, to name a couple. And I was saying to my dad, I said, I want this weekend. He said, well, Carl, you go out, you make the sale, you collect the check, you can go, because there's no other money here. It's your business. So I'm going, right. So I went to Soren site, a builder who was building around the corner. When I say went, I got on the bus, went to the site, arrived on the site, you know, knocked the thing, asked to speak to Joe Sorhe, and I found out he was the big builder now. And I showed him my brochure, said, look, I'd like to do the signs, numbers for all the things. So we went, these look great. And he goes, okay. He says, look, I'll give you an order. And I'm going, that's great. So he gives me an order for 500 quid. And I said, look, I need a deposit, you know. And he's going, well, don't give deposits. I don't even keep a check for care. And he says, well, look, this is my business. Only kid, I can't, you know. I literally was pleading with him. And he went, all right, and literally went to the local farmer's car and wrote me a check for £250. Which, you know, you've got to put in perspective how much money that was. So yeah, got my bus back, had my money for the weekend. Dingle, here we come.
I went as far as Dingle.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, but so, and that's what we were saying just before I turn on the microphone. I'm always curious about the how school stroke college impacted on what. Okay, you mentioned your dad being the hero and you being the person you looked up to.
Yeah.
But I mean, that first deal or anything you did after, what much did the school impact? What you learned in school, was it a bank of information that you were able to use, or was that what?
No, but I'll tell you an interesting social outlook on this. Right, is you take the Rockwell, which is what we're talking about right now, and I'm friends with 6 to 10, very close friends, with 6 to 10 people I went to school with in Rockwell. I wasn't in class with any of them, so we didn't sit together in class. I never sat and study with any of them, so we weren't buddies there. We didn't have beds next to each other, any of that kind of positioning in school. In fact, my best friend in Rockwell, we don't see that much of us anymore, right? Every single one of those friends runs their own business. So I think there's a social filter that kind of goes on that, you know, we have a common bond of 6 years of living together and schooling together, which no means we kind of know each other better than most people would know. But what ended up happening when you take the, I won't list off the names, but every single one of them. And I find that, isn't that, you know, and it's diverse from, you know, running coffee shops to bars to drapery stores to, you know, building supplies. But that coming together, I don't have in my close friend networks any teachers, doctors, nurses. I just think sometimes things filter. They go through that flush of this is where, you know, you can have those conversations. And it's true, you end up in conversations with people who run businesses. And it doesn't matter if mine is one and yours is another. We have common challenges, cash flow, employees, strife, work-life balances. Doesn't matter what business you're in. You can talk to a fellow entrepreneur about that. You can't to some other trades. Just don't get it.
Yeah, no, that is interesting. It's an interesting social. So I suppose your 6 years of conversations and interaction built up something within your teenage years to prepare you for the world, to prepare you for that conversation with the builder going, look, I need the £250, you know, I need them now, because you had the balls to say, you know, I need them, because
I don't know if the two are necessarily connected, but I'm undoubtedly a sales guy, right? I look upon that as being a good thing. Sometimes sales guys can be, oh, wow, man, get a real job, you know? But part of being sales guys is being able to ask for the order. You know, and so many times, particularly, it can be an Irish trait, just don't ask for it. You know, constantly dodging around it. You've got to be able to. So I've never been afraid to do that. And it was just, that was a scenario where I needed to do it, because otherwise I wasn't getting away for the weekend. What I'm in a long-winded way saying is, because my father worked for himself, and even though I'd seen the hard times of that, and real hard times of the 80s and of him, you know, having a business that he needs to shut up and, you know, letting employees go and not having, even though I'd seen all that, it was still what I wanted to do, and it's still what I knew was doable. I think that environment created a lot of my outlook on what I wanted to do with life. I certainly know in raising our four kids, myself and Jenny's outlook is far wider in terms of what we'd like the kids to do, and certainly finishing college is an absolute priority in that. Neither of my parents went to college, so their outlook to college was different than ours.
Okay, that's interesting. So your next song is I Alone by Live.
Yeah,
tell me about that one. I don't know that song.
Andrea, and you're a cultured man. So I was living in the States in 95, and I don't know, I got into a music subscription service with I think it was BWG used to do it. And anyway, this was one of their albums of the month. And it became my, do you have going out songs? You know, when you say, I'm going out, I'm going to, you know, I might have a beer before I go out, but I'm going to get myself ready, feel good. And you go, these are the songs I play. And that was one of the songs that I play, because it's one that you just, you play it, you can't help but shout at it, you know. And yeah, it's real anthem music. And it's just funny, I haven't heard it or played it in a long time, and only recently it was in the background of a movie. And I went, God, life, I haven't heard them in forever. And they were never out of my deck.
So I want to know about your first proper business then, what you built up and how you built it up, because obviously that was just something you did as a teenager, and then you found your way into the business world.
So I was in the States, I was there working for a year. I wasn't on a visa, I kind of went over to see a friend and then just hung around. And but whilst I was there, this is 95, I was introduced to email. And I'd been in sales, but sales were always truncated, you know, in terms of you said, oh, I'm interested, send me something. So you're getting something put in the post. Did you get it? No, I didn't get it. Oh yeah, I'll order that. Send me the fax. It was just absolutely truncated. And I saw email, wow, this is going to really speed this up. So I came back in 96 and I set up a company called PhoneNet. And the concept of PhoneNet was an outsourced sales team that would work on computers and have the best of technology to make things happen. Our first contract I kind of fluked upon was with Bus Aaron and Inroad Aaron selling the advertising space in their timetables. And you know, you go, well, how'd you get that? Because no one wanted it. It was on the table. Look, no one is selling this advertising space. So I'm going, well, I'll do that. Give me a third of the revenue and I'll do that. So they went, yeah, cool. Whatever you sell, you can keep a third of. So I literally had Sony Business Center on Dame Street. And you could rent a desk by the hour. And you got the phone and everything included, because no mobiles, you know. So you literally, you'd go downstairs, you come back up, and you go, there's your calls and there's your hours. And now when I say a desk, it was a slab of wood, like, you know, like literally a piece of wood. And I would go down there with Golden Pages and just start dialing B&Bs and stuff like that. And then we got enough business up to hire one other person. By the end of the year, we had 8 employees, and then the following year, 16. And within 10 years, we were 450 people.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that's moved from there to morphed into something else? So that was the...
Well, no, the concept of the business was always outsourced. So it became an industry known as BPO. I didn't know that when I got into it, right? So business process outsourcing. But what our speciality was utility sales, both to businesses and consumers. So we were, in 96... we were the largest outsourced provider of utility switching. So moving you from Vodafone, from Air to Vodafone. Now, at the time, it was moving you from Aircom to TalkTalk and BT.
Wow. And 450 people, all based in Ireland?
No, 150 in Ireland.
Excuse me.
We were in Estonia, Riga, and India. Pune and India, wow. Yeah. We were the first company in Ireland to have a direct connect with India, a direct line. So we literally had a cable that went from our office to Mumbai.
A physical cable?
A physical cable. Yeah, I was asked, did I want the cable? Effectively, this concept is alien now because IP is what it is. Mm. But at the time, if you were making it, if what we wanted to do was have that, our people in India had the same switch and management and capabilities as our people in Ireland. And that way we felt we could sell Indian operations much better. So, yeah, I was asked, I said, look, did I want the cable to go up the Suez Canal around the Cape? We effectively, the line was going to cost us 60 grand a year, whether we make one call or no calls. But every call on it was free. It was our line.
Mm, wow. Yeah. And what was your main drive behind it all? I mean, behind building a business from that one wooden desk to 450 in 10 years. Which is, you know, it's no mean feat. You know, it's quite a hard thing to do. And 96, yeah, I suppose we were kind of building up to the bubble or whatever, but...
Well, we went through it. I mean, I remember in 2000, you know, when the dot-com bubble burst, I lost more than half my sales pipeline.
Wow.
And I had clients, you know, which had said, Carl, I need you to scale up rapidly, say to me, Carl, I need you to scale down. And, you know, we were carrying all the costs of that. So that was a pretty tough year. But what was the motivation behind it?
What was your drive? What kept you going? I mean, obviously, you were doubling up. I'm sure you were making money or...
Yeah, I was always able to pay myself a salary. There was, you know, it's a great question because, you know, I'm trying to look back retrospectively at what was motivating me at the time. And certainly in the early stages, I enjoyed building the team and having employees and seeing that this business was becoming something. And then you're setting yourselves goals of, look, can we turn over 20 grand a month, 30 grand, 50 grand? 100 grand, you know, 100 grand meant a million a year, big milestone, you know, and then you hit the million a year and you go, right, what's next, you know? So you're trying to set yourself, we've done that, now let's do more, let's do more, mm-hmm. let's do more. And how are we going to achieve that? And then you move from winning what is called transactional business, so neither company really knows each other, it's like a shift, you know, to integrated business where the company's saying, you are our sales team or you are our customer service team and we rely on you. And that's very satisfying, but it also means now you can plan. You're now thinking with a three-year mindset rather than a three-month mindset.
Okay.
So yeah, but you are in the cycle of seeing your business scale and just being excited about that can happen.
Yeah, very good. Smashing Pumpkin, Disarm.
This song is around this time period of growing PhoneNet. So I had no car. So I'd cycle around Dublin to and from work, which at the time was, you weirdo. Well, you know, I only lived in Black Rock, you know, and I was, the offices were in Dublin too, in Ely Place. Weirdo with a bike. How can you be serious? You don't have a car, you know? Pioneer. But I was seeing a girl in town and I had a Discman. You know,
yeah.
Sony. All the age has been showing up, but that was my song. I used to put that song on, you know, going in. And it I was just reminding me of songs. I'm like, man, there's another song I haven't heard in a while. Smashing Pumpkins were of that. I was late to the Pumpkins, right? But I went back to Siamese Twins, which was one of their earlier albums, rather than what was actually out at the time, which was Melancholy and the Infinite Sounds. But that song just struck me, just the lyrics of it. I went, what does he mean by the killer in me is the killer in you? What does that mean? You know, you really think on that, you know?
Just to stay on that question, and the reason I'm asking what drove you and so on, because, you know, I think without entrepreneurs, you know, we wouldn't have the economy that we have. Obviously, you know, some people are happy to work for somebody and get a nice salary and go home and switch off. But as an entrepreneur, you have 24 hours a day, your brain's working all the time. Now, you might not be working 24 hours a day, but your brain is. And, And we'll get to your current business in a minute, but for what you learned, I mean, that was 10 years of full on, as your dad said, you know, the college of life. I mean, that was 10 years of college, full on, you know, learning so much from, there's an awful lot to learn. So if you were turning back the clock now, what would you do differently in that particular business? Just what would you do? Would you change anything? Would you?
There are definitely decisions that were wrong.
Mm.
But that, you only know that from hindsight.
Mm.
There's definitely advice taken that was against my gut instinct, which was also wrong. But I took it.
Mm.
And I think if I'm to say, right, what could I really go, that would have been a good thing to do at the time, was to recognize that, particularly when we were going through serious scaling, and we sold the business into 2000, I think it's important to say at this stage, so I sold the business in 2006 for, you know, 14.5 million. It was a great sale at the time. Now, half of that was in shares, which in the company that purchased us, so I needed for that company to do well, and they didn't, because obviously the economy collapsed and everything went to hell in a handcart. But during that period, I didn't have anyone close to me who said, Carl, sale of a company and how this is going to work for you is very, very different than how you've worked before. Nobody in my team knew it. So it is difficult. God, it's very, very difficult. And I, during that phase, wasn't well managed, wasn't coached, didn't have a coach treating me on. And that would be, and it still remains, if I hear somebody who's made a trade sale and stuff, you know, I congratulate them. I say, now, this period is going to be really tough.
Mm.
And, you know, don't be afraid if it doesn't work out, because it maybe didn't. And hopefully you build that provision into your sale, that, look, if this doesn't work out, I get to walk at this price, rather than getting completely thrown over a barrel. So that's my lesson there.
Yeah, no, because that was interesting you mentioned the coach, because that was my next question. Because sometimes when you're building a business and when you're thinking about building a business, it can be hard to take advice. Am I right? And would you like back then, if somebody come along and say, you know, would you think, were you easy enough to take advice from other people? If you know what I mean, like you have a picture in your head.
It's kind of a question for other people, isn't it? Mm. I think I did. I liked to surround myself with, you know, experts in field. Mm. And I always believed, look, I'm going to drive what I think is the core agenda here and our core purpose. And you need to work out how can we fit in the financial, the operational, the recruitment agenda to say that makes sense, or challenge me on it, you know, and let's make it work. But I saw my role as CEO to say this is where the company's direction is going, and get on the bus. Mm. My point about the not having a coach in place, I had plenty of coaches, but the problem is every one of the coaches was involved in the trade sale and was pre-trade sale and wasn't experienced in that level of the business. I needed somebody to drop in and go, right, I'm not part of this sale, I'm just part of helping Carl. Because everyone starts watching their own self once the sale takes place. So nobody's actually on the same. There's a big friction positioning takes place now. That's a different conversation. But that's certainly a moment where you go, that's a one time I would like to have done something slightly different. Mm.
Yeah, and I guess, as you say, you know, you can only learn by doing it. And, you know,
oh, yeah.
You did. I mean, it was still a very successful company from zero to 40 million.
We did well out of it. There's no issues with that, but there is a lessons learned there that I would apply to, you know, any future trade sale or anything I was involved with.
So then you have U2 Elevation. We're moving up in the years now. Elevation, I don't know how many years ago that is.
2000s,
is it? Yeah. Is it that already?
Okay. Yeah. I had to put a U2 song in there somewhere. And, you know, I wasn't going to put in, although War and Boy were the albums, you know, we all had our Getter Blasters, and you had you know, if you had a 2-take deck, which most of us did, one of them had a permanently a U2 in there, you know. So, but I'd already picked Stiff Limping, so I said, no, I'm not going to pick one of those. Elevation just has a great memory for me from attending U2 when they played Slain. I think it's a great song as an anthem song, but from Slain, it's just what they opened with, and I could remember the edges coming on, and he's just beating, you know, just holding it continually, like teasing it, and everyone's there going, when's he gonna go? You know, when's he gonna say something? And it was just that control that you two can have when they're doing concerts really well, of just, yeah, we're waiting for you, and it was just. And once again, it's like hounds on leads waiting to get going. And then Bono lets out the lead line and the place erupted. Yeah, just one of those great feelings. You know one of those times when it's really great to be in a group and to be at a gig, and that's it. That's a good one.
We were just saying in this beautiful part of the world, we're in West Cork, gorgeous views of the sea. And you decided to move here quite a while ago now. How long ago did you move here?
Well, when I was talking about PhoneNet earlier, yeah. So PhoneNet rebranded to Interaction, and Interaction had grown in Dublin, and we went to Enterprise Ireland and we said, look, where would you like us to go? Like, where would you financially support us to go? And they gave us 6 locations, one of which was Clonakilty. So I visited all 6, came down to Clonakilty, and I went, well, I like it here. I think I could spend Monday to Friday here. So we got a very good deal with landlord and everything else here. So we went, yeah, let's go to Clon. And what I found then when I moved down and rented a house is that my mates from Dublin were saying, no, Carl, you don't come back to Dublin. We'll come down and see you in Clon at the weekends, you know? So after 6 months of eating black and white pudding every weekend, I kind of got into a groove here and went, and we were working very hard to actually getting into, the thought of going back to Dublin for a Friday just didn't appeal to me at all. And then a year on, I'd sold my apartment in Dublin, 2-bed apartment in Dublin, but a 4-bedroom house down here. That seemed like a good swap. Got married. You know, when we started having a family, and then when we sold the building or sold the business, actually the year before, so it wasn't exactly correlated, we got the dream site, you know, overlooking the water, close to a beach, and built our dream house. And you know, it's very hard for us to think about how we would anywhere else from here is a compromise. You know, we've got just a great quality of life. Very happy kids, great safe community, you know, lovely community values. I'm always blowing now, but
yeah, it was
17 years here,
especially with that accent.
Yeah, but not giving that up.
But no, and I know your kids, they're lovely kids, and they're very happy. But how do you deal with the whole thing? You know, is it? You know, obviously, you're not near anything, so there's a lot of driving stuff, but does that impact on what they do daily, or is it just a matter of organizing things and beforehand?
Well, it's okay, so kids are 13, 11, 9, and 5.
Right.
Yes, organizing is militant. So we do 1 drop-off and 1 pick-up. The older kids go to the library so that it all comes at the same time, so they're all picked up at 4:30, and we pick up the youngest of them. So 1 in, 1 out. We're 4 miles from town, put context on. I only just thought about this here, but one thing that is a great byproduct of being out is the kids play together. You know? So if we were in the middle of the state, they might splinter off into their own friends, but they all play together. They'll go out there, good-sized garden, and they'll create their sport, create their imagination game, and everyone from Rory to Kate will get involved in it, you know? So they had boogie boards, you know, which are the kind of juniors, but then they're pulling them down the garden, pulling each other in it. They're making videos of each other. They're having fun, but as a group of 4. Would that happen when we were living in the States? It doesn't really happen to the same level.
They go off to their own friends, yeah.
Yeah, but it is definitely a trade-off. We're in and out of town, at the very least, you know, today did the school drop off, we'll do the school pickup, and then I do training. I train two rugby teams, so I'll be out for them tonight and then back in again. So that's 12 kilometers in, out.
But I mean, that's the fact you got involved with the rugby, coaching the rugby, that's your contribution to the Clonakilty community, giving your spare time to the teams.
Yeah.
And, excuse me. What's nice about the I mean, I love Clonakilty. It's a lovely town. But what's nice about living in Clonakilty, in the town? What's the community like?
What's your postman's name?
Mike.
Mike. So in the 3 years I lived in Greystones, I can remember meeting the postman and asking him. Pretty sure his name is Brendan. But, you know, right here, you know, I know Dennis is my local postman. I know, I know where our local baker is. I know my butcher. I know them by name. They know me. They didn't even know what it says. So that makes a difference. Mm. I'll give you a really good example here. Mm. I was at the post box. I had to post letters. And in the car, kids are doing their usual rah, rah, rah in the car. So I grabbed the letters from the top of the dash and I put them in the post box. And I'm driven away and I realized I hadn't put a stamp on one that was to go to the bank, and it was a particular thing that they wanted, and I'm going, oh, God's sake. So I rang, I had a number on my phone, rang one of the post guys that I know, and I said, Bernard, you're not going to believe this. Can you help us? This is Post Box Technology Park. Put an envelope in, they didn't put a stamp on. He goes, right. He says, what you want to do with it? He says, it needs to go to the AIB. He goes, right. He reached back half an hour later, that's done. You know, and I'm going, that's community, you know, where,
excuse me,
you know, we're all, I just think of how many forms I would have had to have signed in the middle of Dublin if I'd done
that. Yeah.
I could see somebody put me on speaker going, where are you here, this guy, what do you want us to do?
Excuse me. No.
Got water?
Yeah, I gotta get some more water. Okay, well, that's a good story. That's good. And so no regrets, the kids love it, you love it. No, you're not going to go anywhere for the near future.
Well, no, I certainly don't see us going anywhere for the kids' primary and secondary education. So that takes us through for another 10 years.
Okay, so the song Chandelier by Sia.
Yeah, yeah. There's a curve in there, isn't it?
I love that song.
Why do you love it?
Why?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think my daughter played it endlessly for whenever it first came out, and then I saw the video and I thought, wow, what an interesting character. There's a video, she doesn't show her face or something.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think I've seen the video. Every time I hear that song, I go, wow, because the absolute commitment in the singing, you know, is so powerful. And, you know, you also go, there's not going to be many imitators of this song because that is so unique in terms of a human voice and what it's been. And yet, the last 10 years have been female voice, haven't they? Like, there's been a lot of great female singer-songwriters and artists. But just seeing that song is very, very different. You know, it really takes you, doesn't it? And it is that. Anyway, yeah, different.
Now, we're finally getting to your business before. So your current business, Sanctify.
Yeah.
You told me about this once we were running. Oh, and it must be 4 years ago at this stage. We're having a little run. And you mentioned you were going to set up a business.
Somewhere between Grey and Braystones.
Yeah. And you said, oh, I'm going to set up a business called Sanctify. And I thought, great, let me know about it. And now 3 years on, tell me what's happened and what's the business all about.
So, I traveled a lot Since Selling Interaction, I've worked primarily as a consultant in international sales, which at one period involved an awful lot of travel. And with travel, we tend to have bad habits associated with it. Certainly I did, and I know I wasn't alone in it. You know, it's okay to have a drink in the middle of the day. I'm traveling. It's okay to, you know, have a meal on the plane, even though you've just eaten at the airport. You know, they just put it in your lap. So I just found that, you know, my health suffered, my weight exploded. And I just went, you know, one time I was just sitting in an airport going, I don't want to drink. I don't want to eat. I don't want to shop. Is there anything else for me to do here? And that was the concept of Sanctify, was to create better options, easier to access for business travelers to improve their airport downtime. And what we do effectively is we aggregate good things for you to do at the airport and 5 miles around the airport. And that's everything from, you know, a massage, to take a shower, to walks, yoga rooms, runs, gyms, pools. And our secret sauce is access to airport hotels, gyms, pools, and spas without booking a room.
Brilliant. And, you know, I've been part of the journey. I was one of the early investors. So that's my disclosure. And it's great, but it has progressed quite fast in the last couple of, in the last year or so.
Yeah.
So you're now, just give us an idea of the scale of what, where is Ash in terms of access to many hotels around the world and so on and so forth in terms of geographically where?
Well, we're at 92 airports. We have over 500 locations. We all the major hotel brands, Marriott, Plaza, Hilton, Radisson, like all the major brands. If they've got a facility which works and is close to the airport, then we contract with them. Some of the big gym networks, from Planet Fitness to 24/7 Fitness in the US, which have over 1,200 outlets between them. You can use your Sanctify Pass to walk into any of them. But it's more than that. We've moved in our own journey from being very much a fitness focused product to one where we've recognized that everyone needs to improve their travel habits. And we've all developed bad travel habits, not all, but majority of us. And we want to be there to create a product which makes it easy for you to do something better. And that might be just a 10-minute stretch at the airport before you get on a plane, or just 10 minutes to revitalize your body after you get on a plane. Because a lot of us remember we've been sedentary for quite a period of time. And we associate the either end with, I need to rush to the airport. Stress, stress, stress. Sit down, sedentary. To getting off the plane. I need to get off the plane. I need to get my luggage. I need to get back on the train to get into work. And it's just a terrible habit that we've got ourselves into. So what we want to do is break that habit. And our primary goal now is to work with the larger insurance companies, travel companies, and organizations that, you know, as part of their duty of care to their traveling employees and to their customers, are saying, yeah, we want to help that person. So we're creating more content, video content, real life advice guides to be able to say, thankfully, what have you got for me here? And we're a very exciting stage now because we're actually changing the product, changing the app, now to its version 2.0, to hopefully being more reflective of what you like and what you want at every location, and presenting our content in a more relevant and holistic fashion. So yeah, really excited about 2019.
No, it's great. And what interests me is that although, like, when you were there in 95, whatever, you were introduced to the email, and then we thought, okay, that's it, that's the end of, then there was Skype, and then it was the end of traveling, it was the end of paper trail, it was the end of all that, but we travel more than ever, right? Like, there's companies out there with executives on the plane every week or every day.
Yeah, I mean, the numbers, Frost and Sullivan did a report on Airport 2030, and, you know, there's 6 billion flights taken a year. You know, 6 billion of nearly the population of the Earth in terms of employments, people who get on a plane. So it's huge, and it's growing year on year. As companies become more global, there's a requirement for people to travel more. And, you know, you could start a job, you know, with HubSpot in Dublin on a Friday, and on Monday you're on a plane to Boston. It's no longer the top line, you know, doing all the traveling. But the point is our habits are still, as I say, they're madman habits.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, 11 o'clock, martini. You know, yeah. It's just, yeah, the only thing we've stopped doing is smoking, you know, but the rest of it is pretty bad habits. And, you know, the planes are getting tighter, the pitches are getting tighter. You know, I really feel there's a real tsunami coming in of kind of two waves joining up where wellness is pretty much a new word to most of us, right? And, you know, companies saying, I need to take care of my staff. I need them to travel more, but every single report says traveling is not good for you. Like, there isn't a single report that says, hey, travel more by plane is good. So I think those are building up in pressures of saying, well, how am I going to prove, or how am I going to actually start making a difference in how Andrea travels?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's been all these reports about seating is the new smoking, and the next would be traveling is the new smoking or something. I don't know. Maybe it's already there.
Well, Columbia University did a great report. Which was further brought out by in Harvard Business Review, just talking about traveling and actually looking at the negative effects of it. And they were documenting what was happening with people's BMI, their alcohol consumption, their general health, their prominence to diabetes. And it's not pleasant reading.
Mm.
And these were based on people who were taking 6 to 10 flights a month in the US. So as I said, it's scientific. It's not. You know, people know, and anyone you speak to who travels will talk to you negatively about the effect it's having on them, both their energy levels. And, you know, I met a guy recently, and he says, oh, yeah, and he tapped his belly. He went, travel weight, right? You know, and I'm going, that's what he calls it. He says, that's my travel weight. So,
but it's interesting that you're going to the source as such, because if it's left to the individual, you know, it's like anything. Our habits are our habits. Depends on whether you're good enough to get up and do it. But if it's coming from an insurance company, if it's coming from the company itself to say, look, that's your travel package. You know, as part of your traveling to the US every week.
Yeah.
That's your Sancta Fly pass. So you can go and have a shower. You can have a massage. You can have a run when you get there.
Breaking habits is hard. And that was one of the things we realized early in this journey, because we made a classic mistake of presuming if we present the options, people would make the right choice. You know, if you put a gym and a pool right next to a burger, people are still going to be conflicted. Yeah. Am I going to go for the burger? Or am I going to go to the gym? So then we realized we have to help with the breaking of habits. Mm. And there's a lot of really good discussions and helps around this whole space right now. And a couple of the really important keys on it are: make it easy, create the baby steps, create early milestones, you know, in this positioning. And what we realized earlier, said, look, having the gym and the pool is really the top of the mountain. What we have to do with each traveler is say, okay, if we can get you for 10 minutes saying, right, I'm not going to have a beer, I might have one beer instead of two. Before I have that beer, I'm going to go off and do this 10-minute stretch that Sanctify presented to me. They've shown me where it's quiet to do it at the airport, and they've given me the video to do it. I'm going to do that. That to us is that's a little blue ribbon, you know. And then we move you from that to saying, right, before you get on that flight, have a shower. You know, 20-minute shower. You know, revitalizes the body, change goes. Okay, that's another good thing for you to have done. And we move you slowly up that that ladder. And by creating those steps, you know, you don't just go out one day and say, I'm going to run a marathon. And that's kind of the akin to changing habits. So if you're in the habit right now saying, I always fly Stansted to Dublin, small trip, every Thursday evening, and I have two beers and a spaghetti bolognese before I get on that flight, because that's what I do. We want to change that last habit to saying, I go to Stansted Airport, I go to a pool and a sauna next door in the Radisson, which is gorgeous. And then I go into the airport and I have one beer. You know, or I have a salad in the bar. Maybe you mightn't change the food, but did you just do something that was good for your body, you know, and your mind, mental state beforehand? That's our goal.
That's brilliant. So breaking out by interference.
Yeah.
What's this song about?
That's a bit about my kind of nod to West Cork, my home for the past 17 years. So interference are a... a really a West Cork kind of phenomenon, Cork phenomenon. a super band that I came very late to, but I love the music. It's an album I put on regularly. They're live at Dingle. I'd recommend to anyone. Yeah, they're just great songs, and Breaking Out is one of those songs. I could have picked any of them, but I just picked that one that kind of speaks out. So enjoy.
Together as we lie, the windows kiss the blackened night sky. You ask me, who am I? And I make a sad reply. Then you told me of your friend.
Now we need to come to the end and let you go back to your work and making millions and zillions and get zillions.
Great Rodney Trotter of you.
But
paying the rent. Keeping my kids in clothing.
Yeah, but speaking of the kids, you have the four kids. What if in a few years' time, whatever, yeah, finish the secondary school, the first one turns around, or the second, the third, whatever, turns around and say, look, Dad, I'm going to drop out of college. I have this great idea. I'm going to pursue it. What are you going to do? How are you going to react?
I haven't thought of that conversation. My kids are coming into teenage years, so I've thought out other conversations.
That's why
I expect to have before then.
I can tell you all about those. Don't worry. what would you say? Or to any young entrepreneur that wants to go all hell and leather, you know, try to get you, you know, follow the dream that was your dream when you started, you know? What would you do?
I think the biggest mistake I see entrepreneurs make, and you know, I'm guilty of it sometimes myself, in terms of I have lots of ideas. I actually keep a book where I go, I should do that, and I write them down, you know, and it's a book which I like having around. But the best advice you can give any entrepreneur is find a need, satisfy the need, build the product, the solution to solve the need, right? And make the need a pain, you know? Don't make it, you know, a nice to have. You know, don't be a vitamin. Be the pill. Be the penicillin. So we tend to sometimes, as entrepreneurs, go, wouldn't it be great? You know, wouldn't it be great if bikes could fly and you know, you can get caught in traffic? Yeah, let's build that. You know, and that can be just very, very far out thinking. And you need to have far out thinking to kind of come up with good products. But ultimately, where's the need? And before, and this is the great thing about where we are now, don't think your idea is so special that you can't share it. You know, don't go to your best friend and go, look, I need you to sign something before I tell you this, right? Just go start talking to people about it, because 99.5% of the conversations you have, they're not going to run with your idea. And it's not out of loyalty. It's because they're not inclined to do it. It's not that position. But you need to bounce it off people. And you most of all, you need to bounce it off who you think are your market. If you think that, you know, a 42-year-old, and this is how tight your market needs to be, is that, you know, it's a white female with two kids who lives in a, you know, an affluent economy. If that's your market, you need to go and meet 100 of them, 20 of them, and see how many of them say, if I build this, you know, would you buy it? How much would you pay for it? And, you know, accept their answers, accept their first answer. Because you don't get a chance to go in and say, but, you know, let me tell you what else it does, you know? That's it. So if I think in answering your first question, if any of my kids came to me and says, look, I have this idea, I'd say, well, let's do this acid test on it. Just do this acid test on it. If passed the acid test, you have my full support. Okay. Yeah.
And just the last question on that, because you've obviously gone through several times with the system in Ireland, the support system that there is or there isn't there, whether it's the local enterprise offices or is it quite good for entrepreneur Ireland? Is it well?
I think it's very well established for certainly the new entrepreneur. You know, if you've got an idea, then they're well supported to help you take that idea to fruition. If you are working in a company right now and you have an idea and you're thinking of leaving the job and going into it, they're very well structured for that. Yeah. And they were very helpful to me in terms of growing interaction.
It's good to know, because we always hear that. That's what I like about podcasts and the length of the podcast. You can actually tease out a few things. Sometimes the news we get on news bulletin is always, the strike is the badly paid. It's this, there's all the bad news. We hardly get the good news. We never get the nice stories about, civil servants or whatever it may be to look after the entrepreneur. So it's good to know.
Well, I mean, you can't knock Ireland's success in both foreign direct investment and how we're way above our weight on that. I think the entrepreneur scene in Ireland is also, again, one of the healthiest in Europe. So it's the envy of a lot of places in Europe. So that doesn't come about because you're Celtic. That comes about by what's in the ecosystem and the structure to create those pieces. So yeah, I think those sides are good. I mean, we could spend another hour talking about, is the tax system good for entrepreneurs? No. Is the tax system support risk? Definitely not. So on those sides, you're going to give them poor scores. You balance
it. That's interesting. Yeah. That's interesting. Okay, look, the last thing I'm going to ask you and ask everybody is just a couple of words of wisdom. Things that get you out of a quote or anything that gets you out of bed in the morning. Anything.
Words of wisdom.
Anything at all. Just a quote where you go, right.
Yeah. God, now it's one of those classic, I've got 20 quotes coming into my head and I'm trying to de-jumble and going, what's the one that goes on? You need to stop the tape here.
That's okay. I'll edit it out.
I'm trying to be too smart. But I like to start my day thinking positively about myself and about the day itself, So as cheesy and all as it may sound, I think it helps to, have your shower, look in the mirror and say, today's going to be a good day.
That's good enough.
And it's simple. There's an element of self-affirmation in it. But maybe we don't do it often enough. I know there's certainly periods in my life of, not done it. I do it now and I like it.
That's good enough for me. And your last song is Hallelujah by Jeff Buckley.
Yeah.
Why that?
It's the song that launched 1,000 songs. I don't know. Look, when I first heard that song, I'd never heard of, I'd certainly heard of Leonard Cohen, but I'd never heard Hallelujah by Leonard Cohen. And I just go, wow, what a song. What a song. What a version. And it's gas. It resurrected Leonard Cohen's career, because the royalties he got paid from everyone who started covering Hallelujah, but that started it, Well, in my view of history or musical history, it did. And I was just thinking about it, and I went, I'm going to play that again. I played it back and I went, oh, it's still a great version. My God, that is a great, great interpretation of a song. And you listen to Leonard Cohen, you go, oh yeah, man, that's cool. But it's not Jeff Buckley. And man, and he's one of those artists gone too soon, gone too soon.
Well, Carl Llewellyn, thanks a million for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
David played and it pleased the Lord, but you don't really care for music, do you? Well, it goes like this, the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall and the major lift, the baffled king composing hallelujah, hallelujah, hallelujah. Faith was strong, but you needed proof. You saw her bathing on the roof. Her beauty and the moonlight overthrew you. And She tied you to her kitchen chair, and she broke your throne, and she cut your hair, and from your lips she drew the hallelujah, 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 hallelujah. Well, baby, I've been here before. I've seen this room and I've walked this floor. You know, I used to live alone before I knew you. And I've seen your flag on the marble arch. And love is not a victory march. It's a cold and it's a broken hallelujah. Hallelujah.
If you got this far in the podcast, I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please share and leave a review on iTunes. It's much appreciated.
Well, there was a time when you let me know what's really